Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Paul Kuharsky, Nick Kieser here with you on this Wednesday morning. We're taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We got the Rob Rant coming up at 7:45. Your thoughts on the Titans right now on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. PK, Amy Adams strunk. Obviously, since she's taken over as controlling owner, Titans have had a good deal of success, right? I mean, they made the playoffs under Mike Mularkey, got the first playoff win in more than a decade, moved on from Mularkey. Vrabel comes in, they get to the AFC title game, won the division a couple of times. So there's been a reasonable amount of success since Amy Adams Strunk has taken over as controlling owner. You've been here the whole time since the Titans have been here to Nashville and have been the Titans. You know the story of the ownership part of this with Bud and then the transition after Bud passed away and moved on, and now Amy Adams Strunk in control here. How do you view her, the job that that she has done to this point, and the job that is still left to do for her in this organization to get to the place where they're winning a Super Bowl for the first time in the history of their organization?
Yeah, overall, it's been pretty good. I'll break it down into a couple sections. You know, this was a mom-and-pop operation that she inherited.
Yep.
And it's a lot less of a mom-and-pop operation now. Now, I wouldn't want it, and I think fans wouldn't want it, to be corporate. And so it still has a family feel. She's terrific with fans and gives it that family feel. But in terms of building the operation from a mom-and-pop shop into a more robust business – that's got the resources that it needs, she's been very good. I think Burke Nyhill is a very good team president, the successor to Steve Underwood, who was Bud's right-hand man. He and Adolfo Birch and a lot of people got the stadium deal done very smoothly. You can argue for or against it, but it was not a contentious thing as compared to most stadium deals. There was not a lot of fighting. There were people who were vehemently against it.
Sure.
And vehemently against the city and the state's contribution to it. But ultimately, the city's getting a building that continues the city's massive growth, which the city, quote-unquote, you know, speaking as the city, wants. That's going to be a 365-day-a-year venue that's going to bring massive events here beyond NFL football, which city people want. In terms of growing the Titans operation, you know, they built a new building over there, which I think they've already outgrown. There's a brand and creative department. You know, this is something that even 5 years ago, I think, was unheard of. They have a senior vice president of brand and marketing. They have a vice president of brand and creative. Under that vice president, there are 13 people working in branding and creative development. This is something that, you know, not that long ago was like incomprehensible.
Yeah, just didn't think of it.
That they'd have one person doing that. Better yet, 14 or 15 people doing that. They make hires like recently Ansley Moore, a director of player and family affairs. That may sound, you know, ridiculous or whatever to you, but even before the NFLPA survey came out where they graded poorly on treatment of families, they had an intention to make this hire that would, you know, and you look at, you know, people look at first-class organizations and say, well, they treat their players great and they do that. And they know, like, hey, we didn't do a great job with families or we can do better. And they go out and they find somebody and they address that. Where once upon a time, Bud, you know, and it's a different era, but
yep.
Bud wouldn't have given a damn about something like that. They've doubled the size recently of the sports performance staff under Zach Woodfin. So not only, you know, do they have a new guy in a football department that's very important that has come under a lot of public pressure. I think maybe too much for its role in injuries. But Callahan hires a new guy, and then she provides enough budget that he could bring three additional people on board and double the size of that. So is that going to have a tangible effect? Well, you don't know, but it's certainly better than having three guys under him, three people, to have six people. The football operation, I know everybody's excited now. It's a new structure, and there are new people, and everybody likes that. And Callahan looks and sounds great. We don't know about the results. We have to wait and see. Everybody's excited about people. The Carthon-Brinker structure seems fine as it's operating at this stage, but it's still odd the way that whole thing came down.
It is.
For a non-GM to have a bigger title than the GM is super uncommon, maybe unprecedented. That's weird. You know, who's talking her into that kind of stuff and advising her on that kind of stuff? We don't really know. The Robinson firing was a reactive and emotional move that could have waited until the end of 2022. John Robinson's not doing a heck of a lot from week 13 to the end of the season that's impacting that team. Somebody that's like a fringe family person had too much weight in influencing that decision. Is this person that's connected to the family, who doesn't have a football background and is rising up the ranks of administration over there, being given too much too soon? That's something that concerns me. That's something that happens in NFL football families sometimes that goes maybe unchecked.
Yeah.
You know, who's the person that's going to tell her, hey, you know, this guy doesn't need to have as much say or have your ear as much as he does? And I don't know him particularly well. He seems like a perfectly good, smart dude. But he hasn't paid the dues that most people pay to get into the position he was. Vrabel's tone, the tone that she had or that came out of the organization with regard to Vrabel in stories that we read and from sources was that almost that she didn't have control of him, like that the employee was controlling the boss.
Yeah.
And that bothered me that she didn't sit him down and take control of situations. I don't like the way things are running. You change, you know, and that ultimately only firing him was the solution and not adjusting course.
Yeah.
She put out that he was their guy during the season and then changed her mind and he wasn't the guy.
And not just during the season, about 7 weeks before they fired him. Yes. It wasn't very long.
And even worse, she put out a press release that Mike Mularkey was their guy like 2 weeks before they fired Mike Mularkey. That's bad management in that realm. And she needs to do better with that if and when and inevitably when things go bad with the next person. So I think in the football management area, she can do better. But she's very likable, personal with I think she should be more out there speaking at difficult times when Vrabel was fired. Yeah. When Robinson was fired, when Robinson's fired and Mike Vrabel, who reported to Robinson, is doing the team speaking, that's not silliness. But overall, she's grown this franchise. The football winning hasn't gotten to where it needs to be. But I think she's gained respect around the league. The stadium deal came off really well.
Yep.
And the people she put in charge of that did really well. And things are looking up for the team so long as it does what?
Gets
to a place where it wins with some consistency or ebbs and flows where the winning is bigger.
Yeah.
And ultimately they get a trophy in the lobby. A
couple more things I want to hit on the Amy Adams Strunk front. We'll do that coming up next. Take your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game.
feel about the way everything's gone since the big changes?
Well, there's been an exciting couple of weeks, I tell you. I'm just thrilled with what Rand and Chad and Brian were able to get done.
Can you imagine they bring that many people through the door this quickly?
I didn't know quite we were going to head that way, but you know what? I'm super thrilled, super pumped, super excited for our fans about how it's all going to go down this next year.
And a couple of those guys said they felt the energy of employees top to bottom as they walked in. I imagine that was exciting.
That definitely feels good to me. I'm glad that's the energy. I'm glad they're excited to be here, and I think it bodes well for our season.
That was Amy Adams Strunk a few months ago down at the owners' meetings with Paul Kuharsky from paulkuharsky.com doing some investigative journalism.
Yeah,
work.
Had to negotiate hard for that 60 seconds.
Paid off for
you. I'm appreciative that I got that in the lobby in where were we? Orlando.
Orlando, yes.
Scenic Orlando.
Good stuff there from Amy Adams Strunk. So, yeah. A couple things that I want to touch on just real quickly before we continue this discussion. You know, we laid it out. There's been a lot of good since she's taken over as controlling owner.
And we should point out, she started with a mess.
A terrible, terrible. I mean, it was matter of fact, you know, from game day presentation to the product on the field, everything about it was
getting
just
people in
stale.
The stadium.
It was awful. So there's no doubt about it. Like, there was an immediate difference that you could see when she took over. And to her credit, I think there was some intentionality on her part to actively try to correct some of those things that we had just not seen before that. There was a lot of, you know this, they showed up in 99, immediately went to the Super Bowl the first 5 years. They had a lot of success, and they felt they could just churn things out there and people would always show up, and that was not the case.
And then Bud got ill.
Yep.
He was relatively uninvolved. And then Tommy Smith took over and just had no idea what he's doing.
Exactly. So she deserves a lot of credit. There's been a lot of good since she's taken over. Some things that I've been critical about, you brought up the John Robinson part of that. You know, I'm not saying John Robinson didn't need to be fired, but the timing of it was not great. And the one thing that really I think I'd like to see improve moving forward here, big moments, whether it's a coach firing, a GM firing, even good moments, like an unscripted press conference appearance from her, to hear from her more often, I think would serve her well. And when she does talk, I think she handles herself fine. Like, I don't think there's anything that's wrong with it when she talks. So when Vrabel got fired, I thought it was a joke that Rand Carthon was the one up there answering questions. She should have been the one up there answering questions. So that's the one part of things moving forward here that I would like to see, that I'm not convinced we will see, but that I would like to see improve moving forward here.
I also think she's made a few odd decisions on hiring and firing. Stuart Spears, who was a institutional guy with the organization, was instrumental in organizing the draft here, which was a success by every measure, and he was fired shortly thereafter.
Yep.
So that makes you feel like there, you know, something happened between them that, I don't know, to me shouldn't result in a guy of that stature with the organization who had that success going. Jimmy Stanton was hired here very early by her for a high level communications gig, which they needed at that time. And he pushed back against her on something and was fired. And then Gil Beverly was hired, one of her early big shot hires. He was with the organization a little over 4 years. His title kept changing. He was vice president of brand marketing and communications. He was chief marketing and revenue officer. He was chief marketing and strategy officer. I found him to not really comprehend like how the NFL worked at certain things. Like, I got caught up in a thing where John Robinson was very pissed off at me.
Yep.
Over something I wrote. That was right when I was negotiating a radio deal, and John was pissed at me.
Yep.
And I said, Gil, GMs get pissed at reporters all the time. Wait a week and then go back to him and see how he feels. And he couldn't comprehend that. So I had some personal feelings about him at the end, but he seemed to have his fingerprints on a lot of stuff. He was scattershot. He was all over the place, and he went from being like the golden guy in 4 years to being fired for reasons that nobody, you know, publicly would discuss. So some of that hiring and firing stuff seems suspect in some ways. On the other hand, you know, we're talking about, again, an organization that has grown exponentially, and so you would expect some of that, I guess.
Yeah, and then there's the Vrabel part of this. I was critical at the time of the decision to fire Vrabel. I thought it was premature. I thought Vrabel deserved another shot at it. It is what it is at this point. They fired Vrabel. I didn't like the way the press conference was handled the next day. I will say, and we talked about this at the time too, PK, clearly they identified, and she deserves credit for this, Brian Callahan pretty early in the process. They went out, they got it done, they didn't let him leave, and he's their guy. And again, he's not coached a single snap yet as head coach, so I have no idea how good or not good Brian Callahan's tenure is going to be here in Nashville. But clearly, they wanted to make some changes. They wanted to, with for lack of a better term, and they used this term, quote, modernize some of the stuff that they're doing. And we'll see how it pays off. But at least, whether you want to give the credit to her, give the credit to Carthon, whoever, they identified their guy, they went out, got him, and now we'll see the result.
I wonder a little bit with her, and I think this is a question in a lot of markets with a lot of owners. You know, how much these guys, you know, the Miss Amy thing, how much some of these guys are able to sweet talk her or win her over. And I don't think this is any different, male, female. You know, you go to whatever market and however football-y the owner is, you present the plan and you try to knock the owner off his or her feet.
Yep.
And you get in their good graces. That's another thing that she's done too often is she's got a favorite, right? So she chose between Rustin Webster and Mike Mularkey. And Mularkey was her guy. And then Robinson came in. And then Robinson was her guy. And then, you know, for a time, Vrabel was her guy. And she needs to get to a point where everybody's her guy simultaneously. And I think smooth-talking people who, I don't want to say suck up, but we all know how that work culture is. We all have friends in our work culture who we look at them interacting with the boss and we say, come on, man. Right? And I think,
what are you doing?
I think in that building, there's some of that. Now, most of us don't work at a place, I don't think, with an owner that has the kind of stature an NFL team owner has.
Yep.
But Blake Bedingfield tells a great story about Bud. You know, there was like a notice going around that Bud was going to be in Nashville one day. And, you know, so everybody's supposed to dress better. And Bedingfield didn't get the message. And I may be butchering this a little bit, but the general theme is correct. Blake wore shorts and a polo shirt or whatever to work that day. He wasn't dressed up. Everybody else was dressed up. He got into the office. He knew, like, uh-oh.
It's not good.
I messed up. And so he's trying to avoid running into Bud.
Yeah.
He goes to the bathroom, and he's at a urinal, and Bud walks in. And is at the urinal right next to him. And they end up washing their hands next to each other or whatever. And Bud says, hello. And Blake says, hi, Mr. Adams. How are you? And Bud, like, sizes him up and he goes, something like, yeah, you're not sucking up today. I like to see that.
That's good.
Or something like that, you know?
That's good.
So he was aware enough that, like, everybody was dressed up on his behalf, and here's Blake just going about his daily business. So he, like, scored a point, though he would have completely dressed up like everybody else did had he gotten the memo.
That's right.
So that sucking up stuff, I'd like to feel better about the fact that she won't get wooed by that at crucial times on crucial decisions.
Yep.
And maybe she'll get better at that, or maybe it won't be as important if the football's consistently better.
615-737-1025, our phone number. A couple of questions on the Amy Adams Strunk Titans front on our text line that I want to get to coming up next. Got the Rob rant coming up at 745. All that ahead. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. This Friday, 1025, the game's Chase McCabe and Joe Rex Road will be broadcasting live from the Grove Golf Course from 3 to 6 with live updates on the LIV Golf Tournament brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics. I look forward to Rex Road's golf leaderboard update. Could be special.
I saw 2 days of that are sold out.
Yep. It's going to be fun.
It will be interesting to hear what it's like out there.
Bryson DeChambeau going from winning the U.S. Open to the LIV Tournament here in Nashville. So we'll see how that goes. Got some tickets to give away to see Monster Jam coming up at Nissan Stadium. A 4-pack of tickets to Caller 3, 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Caller 3 will win a 4-pack of tickets to Monster Jam at Nissan Stadium. Got a texter on the text line. Do we view Amy Adams Strunk as a hands-on or hands-off owner, and which do you think is better? How would you answer that one, PK? Hands-on, hands-off?
Yeah, I think she's mostly hands-off. I think she hires people and lets them do their job for the most part. I think she steps in once in a while. I think she was responsible for Craig Aukerman being fired, and I think that was a situation where it was good to be hands-on.
Yep.
When Mike Vrabel was so insistent on keeping Aukerman. That's speculation, 90% speculation, 10%. Insight on stuff. You want your owner to be hands off unless your owner is a super football smart. And who's the super football smart owner in football? Jerry Jones thinks he is.
Yeah, it's not going so well.
And what's that done for him? I mean, everybody knows Dallas would be better served if he hired a football person and let that person work as a GM. I think it's good that she's got multiple properties in Nashville. I don't know if she's into the land that she bought for her horse life here. I imagine she is by now. And Bud never established any kind of presence like that here, and that was a turnoff to people. And I think that's another reason that she's popular. She's still, I think, would be considered primarily a resident of suburban Houston, but she spends much more time here than her father did, and I think considers herself in many regards a Nashvillian. Her nephew lives here and is raising a family here, and he's the heir to her position. I believe her daughter lives here. And so she's got roots here in a way that Bud did not.
I got a text that says, obviously winning the ultimate factor, but there's more positive energy among the fan base and the city than there has been in a very long time. Another texter asking, how much did Amy have to do with the AJ trade and why didn't she stop it? This is from an unnamed texter.
I think Amy, was letting John Robinson do his job. Why didn't she stop it? John went to her and said, this is what I'm going to do. And she said, okay. I think 95 to 99% of the stuff that a GM brings to her, she says, okay. The rationale for her not to say okay would be if something was financially absurd to her. And I don't think GMs are bringing her stuff that is financially absurd. And in that regard, the hands-on, hands-off.
Yep.
I think she's hands-off. The GM brings her something and says that spells out the rationale, and it's really mostly a matter of keeping her informed. And they will have laid out the budgetary plan in a big picture way early. If this strays from the early budgetary plan, then you would be explaining that as well. But generally, my perception is that you're keeping her in the loop mostly, and it's not even a permission thing, but certainly she's saying, cool, Yeah, great. Thanks for letting me know.
There's been maybe a knock is too strong a word. There's been questions about her before this offseason, and we got this a lot heading into free agency. Okay, the Titans have a lot of needs. They got a lot of cap space. Will they actually spend the money? Like, we don't believe the Titans are actually going to go out there and be aggressive and spend money.
I don't understand where that came from.
I don't either, and they did. Like, obviously, they spent a lot of money this offseason. So I think that should, if you had those questions, those should probably be answered at this point. If you go back and look at where they've been, they've not been able to spend a lot of money in free agency the last few years because they've been right up against it cap-wise. They did go get Clowney. They did go get Julio Jones, and that one was via trade. So they've tried to aggressively add to their team. But if you had the question about, you know, her being quote-unquote cheap and not being willing to spend money, I think that one was probably answered this offseason.
Yeah, I don't think you could call her cheap.
No.
And
is she as wealthy as Stan Kroenke and some of these other owners? No.
No.
But
if you're that wealthy, you're in other business that's really big.
Yep.
And KSA Industries is a big business, but the biggest element of KSA Industries is the Titans.
Yep.
As opposed to some of these other, you know, super billionaire owners. So, you know, and she's learned a lot on the fly. I mean, she grew up around it, but she was not an apprentice.
Yeah.
You know, now Tommy was an apprentice for a while and he kind of got sent away. And that's why it was kind of silly from the start for him. Like, I think the family kind of attitude was like, well, Tommy really wants to do this. We're going to let Tommy go fail at this, knowing that
he
would likely fail at it. And not really knowing what they would do after. And then she kind of bit the bullet and stepped forward and took over the family business, which was not really what she wanted to do. But she did have a passion for it because it was the family business and because of her father's passion for it. And then as she stepped into it, I think, you know, it has grown on her and continues to grow on her.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And then also, everybody, we heard this the other day. We were talking about not even the ownership part of it, but just the history of the franchise. Like, you know, they've been around forever. They'd never won a Super Bowl. It's like, okay, well, yes, they've never won a Super Bowl. They've been to one. There's some steps that they've got to take in terms of what you just talked about a few segments ago. When you win, making the winning take place at a higher level, having less ebb and flow in your franchise and being consistently able to compete. She's talked about that and that being the goal here. You know, you can have good ownership and not win. You can have bad ownership and put together a season where you can win in the Super Bowl. But over the long haul, if you have stable ownership that makes good decisions for the most part, I would have to think that that pays off down the road and it puts you in a better position to be more likely to start to compete for Super Bowls than this franchise has been in the past.
And here's two other things, right? I think you could make the argument, and some people do, that the franchise's DNA just has something crooked in it, right? In the end, something goes wrong. Now, the team is not as bad as people make it out to be. Like, if you look at wins over the last 10 years or 20 years or whatever, they actually rank pretty well, like surprisingly well. But in the end, something always goes wrong, right? You get the number one seed, and you sack Joe Burrow 9 times, and you find a way to lose at home in what should have been your glorious year, right? Something always seems to be amiss.
Yep.
So her job is to ultimately fix that, you know, and fixing DNA is a complex process, right? A lot of
no doubt.
Precise microsurgery. It's not a Band-Aid. And the other thing is, I think, and fans here are like this, and we've talked about this, you know, the same people who are all in on Rand now and want him in a chef's hat and say, let him cook, were the same people that were in J-Rob We Trust.
Yep.
And most of those people are probably listening to us now and hearing the negative stuff, which is not the overall tone of what we're saying about Amy and getting pissed. You don't have to be all the way in or all the way out on somebody. And I think we've given her a pretty good review, and she's done pretty good work. But it doesn't mean there aren't some bad things or some bad traits or some things she couldn't do better. And the tendency of this fan base is you're either fantastic or you absolutely suck. And we've been talking about this for 45 minutes with nuance.
Yeah.
And I would urge you to consider her and everybody with nuance. It's not got to be an Amy we trust or sell the team.
Yeah.
There's a lot of room in the middle. And I think if you sat down with her and had a candid conversation, she would, which is hard to do.
Yep.
She would say, I'm proud of a lot of accomplishments we made in X, Y, and Z, but we've not done well enough at A and B, and we really want to focus our attention on those things, which is all a very reasonable conversation.
No doubt.
Which is not, she's the queen of the world, or we got to run her out of town back to Houston.
Yep.
So let's get away from in J-Rob we trust. Let's get away from let Rand cook in his chef's hat to a place where you can judge and analyze and all these people with some ebb and flow, with some patience, and you know, as things unfold. And they don't have to be canonized. And they don't have to be buried.
Yep, I think it's a great point. 615-737-1025, our phone number. Coming up next, time for the Rob Rant. You can check it out every morning here on the program around 745. We'll do that next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game.
Don't make me angry.
Sometimes you have to tell someone to pound sand.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
This is the Rob Rant.
Now!
Now on Robbie and Rex Road.
What's going on with you, man?
What, am I a clown? Am I here for your entertainment?
This is get off the phone. Get off the phone.
It is that time of the day. Time for the Rob Rant here on Robbie and Rex Road. Either the Rex Rant, the Rob Rant. PK stepped in there yesterday. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. So, PK, I found myself at an establishment a few weeks ago just sitting down and was having lunch with my grandfather. We just played some golf. And I looked up and saw on the NFL Network they were replaying a divisional round playoff game between the Titans and the Pittsburgh Steelers, which I guess would have been the 02 season, and I think the game took place in January of 03. Titans ended up winning the game 34-31. It was a great game. Titans that year went to the AFC title game, lost to, I believe, Oakland out in California. But I'm sitting here watching the kind of the replay of this just on and off as we're eating lunch, and something just continued to strike me as I'm watching it, which then made me kind of double down on it at home later, and I went back and watched the reaction in the crowd after the Music City Miracle when Kevin Dyson took it to the house. Eddie George ran for like a, I don't know, it was a, let's see what the, it was a 1 yard touchdown. So they drove down, Titans drove down the field, ended up making it 14-0 early in the game against Pittsburgh with an Eddie George touchdown. And they cut immediately to a shot to the crowd, and people were going crazy, just high fiving each other left and right, going nuts. Obviously, the Music City Miracle, the place was going bananas. For the people who didn't leave the stadium and were still there, I mean, they were climbing over seats, hugging people. You were there for it. I mean, you remember what that was like. And it you contrast that with what I saw both last night and in the NBA Finals. I went back and watched the celebration after the Celtics wrapped up the NBA championship the other night. And in the crowd, yes, there were people screaming. There were people hollering. You know, some people were hugging each other, high-fiving. But a lot of it was just picking the phone up and recording what was going on there. Just recording the championship, recording Boston finishing the job. Last night, when Florida scored a goal to make it 4-3, they cut to the crowd too, and there you see it. You just see people on their phone recording what's happening and not doing a whole lot of cheering. And my question is, has the smartphone ruined the stadium environment when it comes to sports in today's world. It's reminiscent a little bit of when you're at a concert, and rather than sitting there, and this is a very boomer rant of me, sitting there enjoying the concert, people just record each and every song on their phone of the concert instead of just watching the concert. It's just, it struck me how much different it felt like the crowd reaction was watching some of these old throwback games as opposed to what we see now in the sports landscape. And the smartphone, I blame for it.
Oh, I think it's absolutely changed it, deadened it, and it weakened it. And look, I take a little bit of video at some of this stuff.
We all
and
do.
I think taking a little bit is reasonable. You know, put it on Facebook and show, hey, I was here. And look, isn't it cool? But recording, you know, huge bits to wait for the play of the game or to record an entire song, are you really watching it that much? I don't think so. From experience where I've over-recorded, I don't watch that much. And I'll give you the biggest example I had where I think – so I saw Springsteen on Broadway.
Yep.
Right? It's a small theater, under 1,000 people. You're not allowed to use your cell phone during the performance. But you're told, you know, maybe in the program there's a note that says after the performance he'll walk the stage a little bit and you're invited to take pictures and videos. Now, you know, whether you're a fan or not, picture your favorite artist, you know, doing a 2-hour talk about his life and his music and whatever, and playing those songs. It's a, you know, a brilliant thing from your favorite person. And then he finishes, and immediately, instead of thunderous applause at this incredibly intimate moment with your guy, all he sees are phones.
Yeah.
Right? I couldn't believe how, and I was guilty of it too, right? I wanted my picture. I'm pretty close to my guy. And I'm going to write a story about it on my site. And I want to show you how intimate it is. And I want to show off how close I am, even though I don't have that great a seat. And so I want to be going nuts for him.
Yeah.
But more than that, I want the picture and the video. And so he's doing this 6 days a week, but instead of the thunderous ovation he should be getting from these people, the moment you can have your phone out, everybody's got their phone out, and the applause is very minimal.
That's how it is in sports too. Like, you know, there's a lot of things changing about sports. Like when you're building new stadiums, like especially in the NFL, like the temptation for people to stay at home nowadays is greater than it's ever been. I mean, there's no line for the bathroom. You can get your own food. You've got red zone. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why people like watching sports from home. So I get that. There's a landscape that's changing anyway. But, you know, we were having this discussion, a buddy of mine who's been a big Predators fan for a long time and was talking about kind of like the atmosphere in there. And, you know, it was great during 2015 and 16 and 17, and smartphones were around then too, so maybe it's not a direct correlation. But he's like, doesn't it just feel like things are different? Like, doesn't it feel like things are just different in the crowd? I'm like, yeah, I don't know if that's just a Predators thing. I think it's everywhere. Like, the environment in sports, to me, as somebody who grew up going to Titans games and going to Predators games and going to Vols games, it just is. It feels different, less intense now than it did 20 years ago when you didn't have a recording device in your hand at all times.
It's very interesting to me to look at it through the eyes of my 14-year-old who does not watch games on TV, but will, you know, see snippets of stuff on his reels or whatever.
Yep.
And enjoys that. But when we go to games, is intently focused on the games.
Yeah.
We go to a Sounds game and he will be all in. We go to a Major League game, he will be all in. We go to a Preds game, he is, you know, he might shoot a little video to show off to his friends that he's there. Noah Kahn, he filmed a little bit more maybe than I expected. But he is all in on live events and has no interest in a televised event. Unless he's at a peer situation and his peers are into it. Or maybe, you know, Sunday afternoon, when I'm out, he'll get into a Titans or an Eagles game with his mom. And that's their thing. But yeah. I have no relationship watching sports with him on TV.
Yeah. That's interesting. Because
but when I take him to a game, he loves he's it. Great yeah. to be at a game.
Yeah. No, well, that's good to hear because I feel like a lot of kids are kind of like the opposite way. And again, like this is not some holier than thou speech. I've been guilty too of sitting at sporting events and sitting at concerts and filming stuff. It struck me watching it. It was felt like I was watching a different world, watching the celebration from just an innocuous 1 yard touchdown from Eddie George that put the Titans up by 14 early in a playoff game.
Well, I've got one. One thing to pick up on this from about the phone that I want to ask you about,
okay.
and that I think is a real indictment of where we are with the phone.
Okay, we'll get into that coming up next. 615-737-1025, our phone number, our greatest living baseball player discussion coming up with the aftermath of the passing of Willie Mays yesterday at the age of 93. All that ahead, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game.